From the land of Grandia Diversity in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 8th day of October, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlow. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And a bit later in the program, Eric Snodgrass will join us from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn at $5.30.5, down 3.5 cents on the afternoon. The March contract at $5.39.5, 3.5 lower. And May corn at $5.44.75, settled down 3.25. November beans, $12.43, down 4.25. January at $12.54.25, 4 cents lower. And the March contract there, $12.63.75, down 3.5 cents. The bean meal at $3.18.70 in the December, down 60 cents. The bean oil December contract at $61.51, down 55 cents. Soft red in the December at $7.34 for the wheat, down 7.25. And the hard red winter wheat at $7.37.5, down 3.75 cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago at $130.25 for the December. That's up 15 cents. Feeder cattle in the November down 45 cents at $161.15 for 100 pounds. And lean hogs December contract, $81.50, down 52.5 cents. The price for a barrel of crude at $79.31, a dollar and a penny higher. Diesel fuel at 247.2 cents, up a penny and 3 cents. And the wholesale price of gasoline at $2.36.5 a gallon. That's about 3.1 cents higher. Natural gas at $5.57, down 10.6 cents for the day. And ethanol futures are unchanged on the afternoon. Mike Zuzlow now joins us from GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, to discuss what happened in Chicago for the day and the week, and to look ahead, Mike, I think, to next week's USDA report. That'll come out on Tuesday. It's the first one, well, it's really the second one of the new marketing year, but it's the first one with the old crop ending stocks that are correct. So what are we hearing from the marketplace, and what are you thinking?
Well, the marketplace, I think, is feeling like they're dialing it in pretty well, Todd, because we did close lower on the week now. You know, for the front end corn, last week we closed around 540. This week we're going to close around 5:30, so over a dime lower, and that's mostly because the soft red wheat kind of gave up, and I felt like this week was going to be a big spinning of wheels. We'd open up a trading range and just kind of spin our wheels, and that's essentially what we did, unless you were playing in the oat market, which made a 50% move, a 50 cent higher move on the week. So I think the report had a lot to do with this. I think the energy markets had a lot to do with this, especially Friday morning. If you could probably look at just one story that would say, okay, what's the direction of this market? Because we've been so heavily influenced by the energy complex through the bean oil and the canola oil and the unleaded gas making a new 7-year high today. It was the idea that China was going to start really bumping up their coal output. They have now decided to boost their power and electricity. And I think that helped cool back the bulls in the energy markets, and probably with the report looming helped bring in some profit taking by the longs in the ag sector.
Crop production numbers are due out along with those WASD figures. Do we know what the trade's thinking?
Yeah, I mean, the production estimates are going to be, in terms of the trade estimates, are going to be right underneath a 15 billion bushel corn crop, and right around, in terms of soybeans, right around a 4.4 billion bushel bean crop. So that would be a carryover level estimated at about 1.43 for corn and right around 300 million for beans. That bean number's high. I mean, that's a really big number. I think that if we would come in with a number that level or higher, we may have more weakness in the soybeans after the report, especially if South America gets some really important rains. So that's probably what my focus will be Sunday night, Monday. Did South America get the rains? If not, it can insulate us from a negative report. But if they get the rains and then we get a 300 million bushel carryover for the new crop for soybeans, I don't think the trade probably has that factored in yet.
Yeah, so they come to that in two ways, right? So they're adding, 81 or something like that million in from the carryover, which is bigger based on USDA's grain stocks report.
Right, beginning stocks.
At the end of September, yeah. And then also on a larger bean crop, just getting bigger, I think the trade is not quite a bushel higher on their estimate.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And, you know, you can't argue the idea that the bean yields are holding up well when you look at the harvest progress numbers, because we are still running behind last year in soybean harvest, as opposed to running well ahead of last year in corn harvest. And that kind of indicates that we're running through the corn pretty fast because the yields are not quite as up as much as we thought they would be. And so I can understand where the trade's coming from, but I don't think the market is mentally prepared at, you know, 1245 to be sitting at a 300 million bushel carryover if South America just got a fresh rain and they're looking at record crops as we head into the holidays. So I think that's what we have to deal with. And I'm still on the mindset, like we were talking last week, push harder off the combine sales of beans, hold on to more corn on farm as much as you can. And I say that especially given that we've had some really bad rains in eastern China that is affecting anywhere from 20 to 30% of their production. And it could be quite a catastrophe at this point, depending on how much news we get out of there, how much information we get out of there. But even the Chinese government is putting some videos up saying they're going to have to deal with some insurance payments because of this massive flooding.
I take it you've been digging into that.
Yeah, that was something I featured today on the midday copy, because whenever something in China happens, you know, you really want to stay on track because they really are getting back to more of a central planning, top-down economy. We've seen it in the hogs now. We've seen it in the coal. I wouldn't be surprised to see it in the corn as well as we head into the new year.
Yeah, so if they're going to centrally plan to you, does that, after they get things in order, mean no more corn exports again? It's happened several times over the history of our relationship with them, I suppose.
Yeah, the big question I have to answer right now for myself is this corn going to go into just solid feed grain, and so therefore it's going to go into animals, or is it going to have so much toxins? And, you know, one report even talked about the issue of not having enough electricity generation to dry corn in that area, because that's one of the hardest hits for the power outages. And so it could become a big issue, and so we'll have to see what the commercial markets think about it and what the cash prices do, especially after Tuesday's numbers.
Do you remember where that was? Was it Jilin or Liaoning or somewhere along those?
Yeah, it would have been Shandong is about, that's the heart of it. That's about 10% of the corn. Henan, 9% of the corn. And Hebei, part of Hebei looks like it got it too, even though it's more of an interior province. So anywhere from 20 to 30%, but just, you know, essentially south of Beijing.
Interesting. What are you hearing about corn and yields in the United States?
Yeah, this is where I think I'm going to stand by the idea that you've got some really top-end yields in Illinois, but you also have some, you know, disappointing yields in Illinois, and I would move that over into Indiana. So, I, you know, 250 in Champaign County, easy to be seen, but by the same token, you can move a county or two north or south of there and, you know, be dropping down into the 220s and have a producer that's, you know, disappointed with what he expected compared to what he was thinking in August.
What are you thinking about livestock at this time?
Well, we had a nice run in the cattle. I made recommendations yesterday and last night to get caught up on nearby marketings for both feeders and fat cattle. Wouldn't be surprised to see another leg up in the feeders if the corn market went down, or see a leg down in the feeders if the corn market went up. So going to probably extend my feeder hedges if we get another leg up in the feeders.
And the outside markets, things that folks are talking about a lot, I don't know whether you want to put it in terms of something that's traded, but inflation is appears to be rearing its head, certainly in the fertilizer price. That may be just a COVID, we can't move it around kind of thing, along with Ida and a whole bunch of other stuff. But how do you view it all?
You know, I'm going to take the opposite view of that, Todd, because I think that the higher the energy prices go and food prices go, the harder it's going to be for China and the rest of Asia to not slow down, and therefore commodity demand slows down. So I'm more nervous about 2022 than I was maybe 2 months ago, since the inflation has been held up. But I do think your point's well taken. I think this is part of the reason why the commodity indexes were probably in this market, led by the energies this week, and maybe again next week. But I would use those potential moves higher, led by this commodity index buying that I think is going on, to secure better profit on the farm and on the ranch.
Are you looking to make sales for 2022?
Yeah, and the soybeans about 20 cents away from today's high, that 12 $12.85 level gets me at about a $12.50 cash price. If I do a 60-65 bushel average yield, I can get upwards of $800 of revenue an acre. I feel like that's a good place to start.
Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
You too, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm. That's Mike Zuzulo. He's with GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Let's check in with Eric Snodgrass on this Friday afternoon. He's with Agrible and Nutrien Ag Solutions to see what he's thinking about the agricultural weather forecast. He's a meteorologist. Hey, Eric, thank you for being with us. Let's start right away with the rain we just had, because there's actually been quite a bit of it. Yesterday, I was in just a tremendous downpour.
Yeah, what that was all caused by was what we call a cutoff low. So this is essentially a piece of the jet stream that starts spinning around counterclockwise, big piece, and it sat right over parts of the Mid-South. So, you know, I'm talking Missouri, Arkansas, Tennessee, Kentucky. And what it's cut off from is the main flow of the jet stream. So therefore, it just sits and spins, and we've been dealing with it all week. And we got some of the heaviest rain of the entire week right here in Champaign County just yesterday, in some places picking up well in excess of 2 inches. But that thing just slowly got absorbed back into the flow, and it's still giving problems in parts of northern Illinois today. Just remember, northern Illinois was really quite dry up until this particular event went through. So there'd probably been a whole lot more harvest progress there than here. But now we're asking, when are we going to, you know, have a good long dry stretch, get those temperatures to where we can get the moisture back down again and get back to a way we hopefully think of a fall harvest. And good news is we got some warmth coming in. That's what I like to see this weekend, at least in terms of getting the moisture to evaporate. But there's going to be some people that are in central Kansas, over to Missouri, down to the Panhandles. I'm not joking. They might hit 100 degrees Fahrenheit on Saturday. So there you go. That's what fall's given us so far.
Wow, that'll dry things out fast. What does the 7 to 10 day look like across the Midwest?
Yeah, well, it'll dry things out fast until, that's the thing. You remember last week I said, we need to watch October 10th, okay? And I threw out that date and I said, I've got to be careful doing that. But there was a reason why. We're going to see the first of our many deep troughs in the flow of the jet stream coming out on Saturday. It's going to eject into the Northern Plains. Now, the Northern Plains just had some rainfall and they got a whole lot more on the way. And the reason why this is important is it's been quite dry there. Any leftover soybeans that haven't been harvested, you put this much, I'm talking 1, 2, maybe 3 inches of rain on some of these fields in the Northern Plains, this could cause some major problems with the soybeans that are there. And down in the Southern Plains, they're going to get quite a bit of severe weather. They're going to be seeing quite a bit of heavy rainfall. But you've noticed I've been talking about the plains, not the Midwest. And the reason is the trajectory of these systems coming, starting on the 10th, got another one on the 11th, and one on the 13th and 14th. They're all going to cut into the west, really cold conditions in the west. And then because of the tilt of the jet stream, they're going to go straight to the north. Now, what we end up getting, therefore, is kind of like just a kind of a lashing of the fronts that come to their south. So we've got chances for more rain next week, unfortunately. But the thing about this pattern is it's not one that is going to let us really cool down substantially. I mean, 10 days from now is our climatological average first frost, and I'm certainly thinking we're going to see a later than normal first frost this year.
What do you think about mid-October to mid-November?
Well, the models refuse to break the pattern down, and there's good reason for them to not do that. We've got a bunch of cold water in the Gulf of Alaska now. The MJO didn't help with the progression of the pattern, and there's a big ridge between Greenland and Hudson Bay. So this pattern wants to stay stagnant, and that just means troughs in the west, ridges in the east, we're tucked in between. We will resist big cold air outbreaks until this whole pattern flattens out and moves on. But at this point, I don't think there's a single meteorologist out there that could tell you when exactly that's going to happen. Most of us would say, you know, probably by the third week of October, we're going to see this pattern open up and move. But until then, it's going to be pretty stagnant with the way that it's getting set up this weekend and early next week. So this will be something where we're going to have open harvest windows. They're just going to be not open very wide.
No, I know how all of you meteorologists work. When I ask about winter, you just say, you know, it's going to be cold at some point. Speaking of which, do we have any indication of what winter will be like here in the United States?
Yeah, well, it's the beginning of a new month, which means we get all new long-range weather forecast model data from something called the NMME. That's the National Multimodal Ensemble and the European model. And so the longer term forecast, it's all just hinged on La Nina right now. So what that looks like for us is an active Ohio River Valley storm track, an active what we call Colorado low storm track, which means we tend to be wetter in winter given this setup. Where it's drier is California, Texas, and the Southeast. The Northwest tends to be wetter. The Northern Plains tend to be wetter and more snowier. And the temperatures, while they are not forecast to be overly cold, they're not mild either. Okay, so this could be a normal, quote unquote, normal winter for us in terms of temperatures, which means quite a bit of chaos. But it's the La Nina that's most important here. The latest update now took this La Nina down to what we would call a possibly even a moderate strength La Nina with an average ocean temperature down about -1 Celsius. And that's important given the expanse of the Pacific Ocean and what we're talking about here. So this is now bordering on what we saw last year with the first of these two La Ninas. And it's the major driver in all the long-range forecasts at this point.
And how about South America?
Well, planting progress, as you saw from some of the reports this week, is moving along and the rains are coming in. So there's not going to be any near-term fear that they're not going to get this crop planted and planted fast. And we know that they're going after a lot of additional acreage, and that's been well-known and understood. What I'm concerned about, though, is now southern Brazil and Argentina, because this strengthening La Nina has now reinforced the longer-term forecast. I'm talking November, December, January, February. That time period, it's really reinforced the forecast for drier conditions in far southern Brazil and Argentina. So this is looking like a decent start, but it's not as though we're expecting South America to just smash all records and have a phenomenal year. This La Nina developing is starting to give me concern for the growers I know in southern Brazil and those in Argentina as well.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Friday afternoon. It is public radio for the farming world at willag.org, willag.org. If you go to that website, in fact, you'll find next week's, or at least in the calendar, a link to next week's Farm Doc Daily Fall Update Series. This one looking at grain returns for 2021 this year and 2022 next year. That with Bob Ray and Dale Latz, both with the Farm Business Farm Management Unit here in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, and Nick Polson, agricultural economist. They'll explore production cost and how those are rising at a substantial rate, and they'll summarize the grain and farm financial statements from farms enrolled in the Illinois FBFM, or Farm Business Farm Management Record Keeping Service, and they'll present some projections for the future. You won't want to miss that one. You can get signed up for it right now online at willag.org or at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Speaking of that series, yesterday, Emerson Nafziger, extension agronomist from the University of Illinois, was on the series. I emcee the series, and that's up on our website already at willag.org. He talked for about an hour as it relates to the price of fertilizers, dry and nitrogen, when to apply it this fall or spring, and some of his thoughts on the economics behind the production side of fertilizer. You'll want to catch up on that right there on our website at willag.org.